I'm Lucinda Bassan-Shewitz. I was born in Falfurrias, Brooks County, Texas. And I was reared there, went to school until I was full grown. Now I will relate my experiences from the beginning until the last day I lived in Falfurrias. I attended the public school there from the first through the 11th grade, because at that time that was the graduation level, the 11th grade. I am going to tell you what I remember of my school days as a child. I remember that we, the Spanish-speaking or Mexican-American students, were completely segregated from the English-speaking children, not only in the classroom, but on the playground. We had absolutely no contact with them. At the time, I didn't think much about it, because that was the way of life. But in later years, my attitude changed. In my primary grades, the only English we heard was about 4.5 hours a day. So our English was not very good, because our language at home and outside of school was Spanish, of which
you weren't given an opportunity to practice it, to learn from your environment.
From home?
I mean, since you were segregated on the school ground, you weren't given an opportunity.
No, we had absolutely no contact with the Anglo-speaking children, or the English-speaking children, rather. So naturally, our pronunciation, the extent of our vocabulary was limited. I'm very proud to say that our Spanish vocabulary was much better. And to this day, we're very proud of it. I think it's very good to know one language, the English language, which is the language in this country. But I think it's so much better when you speak two languages. We went through the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth grades with no contact at all, none whatsoever, with English-speaking children. The only English we learned was from the teacher 4.5 or 5 hours a day. So naturally, our English was not the best. I think grammatically it was good, because we learned it by the book. But you need the practice. And we had absolutely no practice. At that time, we didn't have television, we didn't have radios, we didn't have any opportunity at all. So our English was limited. Let's face it was very limited. But by hook or crook, I got into the junior high, which was in the same building, the 7th grade. Of course, we were handicapped. In there, we were joined with the English-speaking pupils. We were in the same study hall, the same classes. And in my opinion, we were handicapped because we didn't have the fluency of the language that the others had. But we did our best. Of course, in the lower classes, we were 5 Now, from there, where am I going? I said. I didn't have the money to go to college. College was something very far away from my mind. I didn't have the means. But at that time, you could take a state examination and get a 2-year certificate. It was in the summer of 26 when Texas A&I opened its gates. And there they were going to offer a course, what they call the summer normal, in which they taught you all the subjects that were required to take a state examination for a teacher certificate. So I attended that. I borrowed $75, and believe it or not, but it lasted the whole summer, $75, and I took my examination. My certificate came kind of late that fall. And of course, it was unmentionable to say I'm going to get a job in the city and the factors of Brooks County Independent School District. But there were a few vacancies in the county. Judge Brooks, not John Morgan, but his father, I don't remember his name or his initials, was the county superintendent. Well, when I got my certificate, there were no vacancies in the county. So I was left without a job. But about a month later, a girl that was teaching at La Mesa, I forgot her name, something was wrong, her certificate had expired or something, I don't remember what. She couldn't finish the year. So I was given that job for 7 months because it was an eight-month job, and one had already gone by. So I took that in La Mesa. I taught from the first through the sixth grade. I taught there 2 months. 2 years, excuse me. I thought there were 2 years. And then there was a vacancy at Encino. And I taught at Encino 3 years. And those 3 years that I was there, I was eyeing a position in the Falfurrias Independent School System. But every time, for 3 years, every year that I applied, there was no vacancy. No vacancy. In 3 years, no vacancy. At the time, Mr. Rufino Garcia Sr. was a member of the school board and a very good friend of my family. So he kept telling me that there would be a vacancy sometime, not to despair. And I did. And I kept my job at Encino. 3 years, 2 years in La Mesa and 3 years at Encino. And finally, the sixth year, there was an opening. I believe it was created at the insistence of Mr. Rufino Garcia Sr. That's my belief, that's my understanding. And I got into the system. I stayed there 5 years. And I feel that those 5 years of my teaching profession, my teaching years, were most rewarding and fruitful. Because I feel that I was accomplishing something that I had always had as a goal in my life, to better the load of our children in school. And I started working on it right away, with the help of a lot of my friends and citizens of Brooks County. We organized a Latin American PTA because it was unheard of for us to attend the regular PTA. I'm relating this as I saw it. We organized the PTA, and it was very successful for the time that I was there. I started teaching there in the system. Let me say this. Let me clear a point. For 4 years, 3 or maybe 4 years, my name was up for a position in the Brooks County Independent, Falfurrias Independent School District. There was no vacancy. But at the same time, new people kept coming in all the time. But there was no vacancy for me. So finally, Now, and I'm saying this because I got it firsthand. Mr. Garcia, the fourth time around, Mr. Rufino Garcia Sr., when he was told that there was no vacancy, he told the board, gentlemen, for 4 years, 3 years, and this is the fourth, there has been no vacancy. Why don't we create a vacancy? And the school board created a vacancy. And I joined the staff of the Falkirk Independent School District in the fall of 32, I believe, if I'm correct, 32. To the system in September of 32, teaching a second grade. At that time, we had as many as 50 children in one room. At one time, I had 52. I don't know that I taught the children anything, but I was trying. The school, the system kept growing, and 2 years later, Mr. and Mrs. Johnny Vela joined the staff. And we organized the Latin American PTA, and things were getting better. The children were speaking a little more English, but still, we were segregated in the classroom and on the playground. And this is no hearsay, I was there. The English-speaking children would go out and play, come in, then we would go out. And that was until I left. It was not any better when I left. It was the same way. I remember one time when one of the teachers, and I can give the name, Miss Hubbard, was teaching a fifth grade English-speaking class. And I was teaching a second grade Spanish-speaking class. And they were coming in from recess, and we were going out. They were a little late in coming in. And one of my boys kicked the ball and hit one of her boys. And she came to me very disgusted because my boy had hit her boy. So I told her that it wasn't that bad, that it was an accident, she knew perfectly well, and that she was just jumping to conclusion because it was our children and not hers. Needless to say, that afternoon I got a note from the superintendent that he wanted to see me in his office. At the time, it was Mr. Charles DuBose. I went to the office, very happy because my relationship with my superintendent was very good. He asked me to come in, and I sat down, and he asked me, what happened this morning? I said, what happened this morning? I don't know. So many things happened this morning. He said, no, out on the playground. I said, I have no recollection. He said, well, did this happen? Did one of this, your boys hit one of Miss Hubbard's boys? I said, oh, that. And I'm quoting what I said. Oh, that. I said, she came to you with it? Well, now listen my side of the story. She had told him that one of my boys had hit one of her boys, and I don't know what else. I said, well, I want you to know, Mr. DuBose, who was the superintendent at the time, that we were out, one of my boys kicked the ball with his foot, it hit her boy, was accidental, but she made a big to-do about it. So I really told her, just like I'm telling you right now, that when our children do something, oh boy, everybody jumps on them. But when they do something, nobody says anything. And I want you to call her right now, Mr. DuBose. But he didn't. He said, no, I understand. And I had great respect for Mr. DuBose. But that died down. But that just was one of the examples of the many things that happened while I was teaching in the Five Peers Independent School District. I may say that Mr. DeBose was a very fair man, but some of the teachers were not. And so the time passed. I taught there 32, 33, 34, 34, 35, 35, 36, 36, 37, and 37, 38. Then at that time, we're going to politics now. At that time, the political machine was very strong, very, very strong. We didn't question it. I had been working at the elections, polls, for quite a few years. We were very happy, nothing happened, nobody questioned the machine. Great big barbecues, a month before the elections, and everything was just very happy. But at that time, our younger men were emerging. They had been exposed to politics. They were getting their own ideas, their own ambitions. And the town as a whole, we were together. The whole Mexican-American town. We had quite a few young men, very well prepared, serving in political positions. I mean, not elective, but appointed, the chief clerk to the sheriff, the chief clerk to the county clerk, and others that I can't recall right now. So we thought we were doing very well, you know? And I might say, educationally, we were progressing. More of our children were graduating from high school. Many more. So we were getting better. And we were getting more teachers in the system to teach our children. I might say that I did get that position in 1932. I was the first one. But then about 2 years later, Mr. and Mrs. John Avella came in as teachers. Later on, Miss Lilia Benavides, who is Mrs. Mora now. Then, Miss Stella Guerra, who is Mrs. Adolfo Canales now. So, things were getting better. Our children were blossoming. I mean, more and more were graduating all the time. More and more were staying in school. So I feel sure that we helped a little bit. So things were getting along very fine. A lot of our boys and girls were working at the courthouse. Like I say, appointed, not elected positions. But we were very happy. Of course, when elections roll around, it was a riot, because it was really something. Barbecues, dances, speeches. Ooh, it was a big time, especially when you were young, you know. So I enjoyed it very much. And of course, I started working at the polls long time before that. And everything went fine, beautiful. But then, if you will remember, then in 1936 or 37, I'm not quite sure on that year, it was 36 or 37, the whole thing broke, and our sheriff, who was so well thought of, was indicted for fraud. And that just broke the barrel. It was the topic of conversation from early in the morning until late at night. And I don't recall very clearly what was done, but I think maybe this is what happened. Someone was appointed as interim to take John Ballard's place. Anyway, I'm not positive. Sometimes my memory fails me, but I believe that Garland Lassiter was put in for the name to serve the unexpired term of John Ballard. I'm not certain. And of course, that was a thing in 36. And by 37, may I use this expression? Hell broke loose. And that's when the so-called Mexican Americans said, this is our chance. Because they felt, and I feel, that they were very well qualified if they had the opportunity and the chance to be elected. So I think we made an extra effort to get together to see what we could do. And we did. We worked very hard to see what we could do. We felt that it was time that we got some of our own people that had been there from the beginning of the county, because our parents had been there. We felt that these young men were qualified. They had served, but they had served under somebody else. So if anybody knew what was going on was these young men that were under these others. So we went to work on it. I say we went to work on it because I did. I had been working for my people, for the schools, for about 5 years already, doing what I could, organizing the PTA, Latin American PTA, because we had no voice in the We were not allowed. So, shall I say, maybe that's too strong, we were not invited. We were not invited. So comes 37, and the ball started rolling. And I have no recollection when, but here comes a man from somewhere, I don't know where from the valley or from Rio Grande or somewhere, a lawyer, Fidencio Garza. I met him. I was very impressed with him. He was a brain. And not only a brain, but he had the power of speech. And not everybody does. And he had the power of speech. It is to him that we owe what happened in the years that followed. I think he made a mark in the history of our county. I think he did. So, I guess I was not there, I guess behind closed doors or in session, private session, or somehow or other, they got together and they came out with a slate. As I recall it, I don't remember who was for chair. I mean, I don't want to say it, whether it was that same year that Garland Lassiter came out. I don't know whether it was that year or the following year. You have to check on that. But I do know when I.J. Benavides came out, county clerk, county and district go together, I believe, clerk. Fidencio Garza, senior, came out for attorney. county attorney, Rufino Garcia Jr., came out for county treasurer. Alfredo Benavides came out for surveyor, county surveyor. And I believe the judge stood as it was. There was no opposition. Now, the commissioners, I don't remember. I have no recollection. So they organized this slate of county officers. They got organized, and we went to work. I say we went to work because I was all for it. And we worked very hard. Very, very hard. In my opinion, very hard and very straight, very honest. Working for what we thought was needed after we had seen what had happened in the sheriff's office. So we went to work. And it looked very good. Fidencio Garza, Sr., was an eloquent speaker, had a pleasing personality. That's what I knew of him. That's what I was interested in, what he could do to alleviate and help the plight of the Mexican American, as they called us. You know, I felt that it was time. We had some officers there in the courthouse, just like I had felt it was time to have teachers in the system. After all, I think 90% of us were Spanish-speaking or Mexican-Americans. So I believed in it. That's why I went into it, without any malice or anything like that. I was going to work for what I believed. So the campaign started. It was hot. It was hot. I mean, but we worked together very nicely. Very, very nicely. And I think it was a clean campaign on our part, on the part of our candidates. As usual, election time came around. And about a month before, maybe 3 weeks before, as was the custom, barbecues, dances, speeches everywhere, people talking, knocking on the doors. As far as I knew, it was a clean campaign. As far as I knew. Of course, at the time, I was teaching in the system there. On election day, as usual, I was one of the clerks. So were other teachers, other persons that had worked at the polls for many, many years. And everything had gone fine. But this year, if I remember correctly, we had a watcher, I believe it is, to see that everything goes right. And we worked as usual, paper ballots, people coming in. By 5 o'clock in the afternoon, the people started congregating at the courthouse yards across the street. By midnight, it was a solid mass of human beings waiting for the returns. But since it was done in paper, by paper ballot, it took a long time, even into the early morning of the next day. Reports, progress reports were given at intervals so that the people outside would know how the election was going. Well, the election was over, and most of the new candidates were voted in. According to the results of the election, we had a new county clerk, we had a new treasurer, we had a new surveyor, we had a new attorney, and maybe some commissioners in the different districts. I don't recall who they were. So everything was fine. It was a great victory. But then things started. I believe the boxes were impounded, because at that time there was just one voting place, the courthouse. We started at 6 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, and it lasted through about 9 or 10 o'clock Sunday the next day. When a person is young at that time, it was a lot of fun for us. It was not for the candidates, but for us it was a lot of fun. So then we started hearing that the boxes had been impounded, that there were some irregularities in the voting or in the counting or whatever it was. I don't recollect just clearly what it was. But I do know that before long, there was a grand jury investigation. And lo and behold, if I was not called as one of the witnesses. In fact, I was taken out of my classroom to go to the courthouse, which is just across the street, to testify. Of course, they called us. They called, I think it was three teachers, including myself, and several others that had worked at the polls. And since they take just one at a time, I believe that I stayed there all day before it was my turn to testify. I didn't know what I had done. I didn't know why I had been called. But I was getting my thoughts together and recollecting everything that had happened. And when my turn came, I went in and I was faced with, I think it was 12 jurors. At that time, since I had nothing to hide, I went in kind of cocky. And I said, what do you mean? So they started shooting questions from right and left, trying to, in my opinion, trying to get me confused and mixed up in my answers. I remember very distinctly the first question that was shot at me was, you took part in this foil attempt. You know. You know what happened, don't you? Now that was the opening statement from whoever questioned me. You know. I didn't know anything, because I hadn't done anything. And then they kept throwing questions at me. Implicate me in a we had committed fraud. That's the word I was looking for. And I told them that as far as I knew, I had committed no fraud. No one had committed fraud, as far as I knew. We had worked like we had been working for the last 6 or 7 years at the elections. And as far as I knew, no fraud was committed. None whatsoever. They shot questions at me from every side. I do remember that I had a little discussion with one of the jurors by the name of Mr. Skipper. Because he kept referring to us as Latin Americans. That was the expression he used, Latin American. The Latin American clerks, the Latin American this, and the Latin American that. So I took issue with that. And I told him that I didn't like that expression, that I would rather be called a Mexican-American. Because as far as I knew, my descendants were Mexicans. But that as far as citizenship was concerned, we were Americans, just as much as anybody else. But if he wanted to make the distinction, we were not Spanish, we were Mexican Americans. They questioned me thoroughly and fully. And there was nothing I could tell them because I had not committed fraud. And no one that I knew that had worked there had committed fraud. After me, several others were called. And that was the end of the investigation by the grand jury. But according to the paper, according to conversations, the thing went on, and I don't know whether it was the grand jury's decision or what, but the county clerk that was elected was, I don't know what you would say, indicted or he couldn't take office. You know what I mean? He couldn't take office. He was challenged, or I don't know what you call it. But there was going to be an investigation. They counted. And they questioned a lot of people. But as far as we knew, we had not committed fraud. We had acted in good faith, or we had done it for the last 5 or 6 years. So the thing went out to the, I think it's Court of Appeals, and then it went on to Austin. I think that's the Supreme Court of the state. As far as I know, the county clerk did not take office. But the county clerk did not take office until, I think it was after the general elections, if I'm not mistaken. But in the meantime, everything was done, and this is my feeling, nobody else's feeling, it's my feeling that in the meantime, the whole old machinery was getting ready to purge every one of those that had taken part in the new party. And needless to say, my head was there, like it was many others were. But of course, we kept on. We were so happy that we had broken the old machine that had been in power for so many years. Comes September of 38. I still had my job in the Independent School District. But you could hear rumors going around, this is going to be your last one. Kept hearing rumors. And of course, I'm very outspoken. I never went to anybody and say, please have mercy on me. I'll go your way. I kept saying what I thought was right. And sure enough, comes May, and I got my papers. I was discharged. For what? I don't know to this day, because I challenge anybody to come to me and debate it with me that it was because of my performance. There was no other reason except that I had taken part in politics, and unfortunately, the machine had been broken, and I was a family. And that's why I don't dispute anybody's word. Each one is free to do what they feel. I feel to this very day that if I had to do it over again, I'd do it the same way. I won't change. And I believe that as a result of the way I feel, that a lot of my dreams, wishes for my people have come true. And I'm very satisfied. Fortunately, I didn't have any trouble getting a job. And you might smile, whoever hears this, but I went to Duval County. I really did. And I was very happy there. I worked 3 years. But every election year, I came back to my hometown to took part in politics, free to say and do what I wanted, because my job was not at stake. Then, war broke out. I was very happy with my position in Benavides. Still speaking my mind, but I felt that the government needed help. They were crying for people to help them in the intelligence department. I felt that I was qualified, like many other people. So I resigned, went to San Antonio, took an examination, and I was accepted to be a censor for the telephone and cable. I was not a post office clerk, I was a cable and telephone clerk to censor calls, international calls. I worked there from March the 1st to August the 31st of 1945. Our job was over when the war was over. We disconnected our lines. Censoring. So, I thought the political part of my life was over, but my desire to help my people. I didn't know how to do anything else. I had to come back to the teaching profession. That was what I was prepared for. So, I came to Brown. I told the superintendent what I had gone through, so it would be a shock, because superintendents have a habit of inquiring to get a backlog of the behavior and preparation of the candidates for position. So I thought I would tell this man what I had done. Like I have always done, I've been very honest. If it's going to hurt me, let it hurt me. But I don't want anybody to say this happened and you didn't say it. So I told him everything, and he accepted me and he gave me a position. And we're very good friends to this day. I was in hot water again due to politics, and he came to my rescue. We're the best of friends. So as far as I know, the politics in Brooks County after that, I served one more time in 1940 at the polls. I was a clerk. And at that time, it was still pretty dirty. It was. Because politics are dirty. I can say that anywhere. I don't remember what happened. It's been so many years, but I do remember that a report was given out, which was the usual procedure, and this report was given out wrong. I don't know if it was given out wrong on purpose or by mistake or something, but I knew it was wrong. So. So there was a leak from inside that the report had been given wrong. Somehow or other, the report was wrong. So the judges were called to attention, and the incident was checked, and it came out that it was wrong. Then, not until after the general elections in November, if my memory serves me right, that the county clerk, district and county clerk, took his place after a much heated fight all the way to the state Supreme Court.
During the interview, you did say that there were no poll watchers before this election, to your knowledge?
As far as I can recollect, no. No, never. I mean, there was no need for them because everything went as per prescribed. I mean,
there's no opposition?
Nothing.
So machinery.
It was, I can say in all candor that it was the machinery smoothly going and spinning around.
Also, could you clarify when the grand jury investigation in which you were involved in?
Now, you have to check that with somebody else because he was either right after the election. And in my recollection, I mean, in my thinking, it must have been then. Am I being recorded? It must have been right after the election because then the follow-up of the county clerk went to San Antonio. It could have been in May, or it could have been in September. I don't remember clearly. But I do remember that I was called out of my classroom, and so were the other teachers. In closing, I'll say that 1940, participation in the politics in Brooks County because war broke out in 1941 and then I went into government service in the early part of 1942 and I had to move away so I didn't have any more to do with it. I do believe that I think I came to vote in 1942. I think that was the last time that I voted in Brooks County. By that time, things were getting much better for our people, the so-called Mexican Americans. At least we were noticed, and we were taking part in the government of our city, and that made me very happy.
Ms. Schuetz, what experiences have you had in your life that has led you to try to improve the educational system for the Mexican American?
Well, I believe it started very early in my life when I started, let's say in the first grade in my hometown where I was born and reared, Palforrias, Brooks County. Of course, at the time, I didn't notice any difference, but as I got into higher grades, I noticed that we, the Mexican Americans, were segregated. In the first grade, we didn't know any better, but we had different rooms, different play periods. Even the restrooms were separate. There was one for the whites, as they used to say, and one for the Mexicans. In other words, we were completely different. Many a fight and many a hair-pulling episode took place in my life. I could cite many, many, but I'm not going to do it at this time. But it was in the beginning, when I didn't know any better. First grade, second grade. Well, I think even in the second grade, I begin to notice the injustices and the things that were done. Because I can remember, well, it sticks in my mind how we were second best in everything, second place for everything. Whatever happened, they were first, the so-called Anglos, and we were, the Mexicans were next. And at the time, I didn't realize that we were as much American as any American. In fact, as I used to tell them later, when I knew better, when I started studying history, we have a better right to be here than you, because our ancestors were here before you. Texas was ours. But now that it belongs to the United States, we are part of the United States, but we want to be treated the same and not with so much discrimination. And the time went on, and from the first through the sixth grade, we were completely segregated, like I said before, in the classroom, on the playground, even the restrooms were separate. And so it went on. I went into junior high, seventh and eighth grade. We were at a disadvantage. Our English was not what it should have been. We didn't have the practice. We spoke English just in the classroom with the teacher, with one another. We couldn't mingle with the English speaking anywhere, except maybe once in a while we had a fight outside of school, and many a fight I was in. Then we went on into high school, which at the time was in the second floor of the old building. I don't know what they call it now. The old white building. That's the only building we had.
I think it's called Central Ward.
I guess so. Yes. That was the only building. There was no other. One and only. The junior high and the high school were upstairs, and the grades were downstairs. That's how small the school was. But in 1932, when I became a teacher there, I became a teacher through the efforts of Mr. Rufino Garcia Sr. I was assigned to a second grade, all Spanish speaking. The reason? Because of the language difficulties. But there were a lot of the children that could speak a little English. And I taught second grade at Central Warren. By that time, they had built a new high school, which is in the corner of, I don't know what the highway and the courthouse. I don't know what the names of the streets are right now.
It's Rice. Cigarettes.
The main highway. But we were in the old building. I was teaching second grade. But still, at that time, since only the elementary grades were in that building, the English-speaking children were upstairs, and ours were downstairs. Still segregated for educational reasons, so they said. But we were never given a chance to mingle with the others so we could get the pronunciation, the language, you know, that you get by practicing with those that really have it. It's a wonder we learn to speak English as well as we do in those days with the opportunities that we had. But time went on, and I finished high school. At one time, I was ready to throw the books in and quit, but my mother won't let me. I had already turned in the books on Friday, and then when I got home, Monday morning, she made me go back to school. And thanks to her, that's why I finished high school. So, I finished high school in a class of 12. Three of those 12s were Mexican Americans, and the others were Anglo-Americans. By that time, things were a little bit better, not too good, but we did go to a class party together with them. We were invited. So, I always look back and remember what a hard time I had had in my elementary grades and how few of us had made it and the reason why so few made it. So I decided then, I believe, just about that time, that if I could help some of my fellow people, my Mexican-American people, I would do so. How I was going to do it, I didn't know, because at the time, I could not afford to go to school, to college. So, I went to what they call a summer normal at Texas A&I in 1926, when Texas A&I opened its doors. And I took, not college work, but a summer normal. It's a review of all the subjects that were included in the Texas teacher's examination. So I took the examination the first time, and I didn't pass it. Then I took some books out, and I studied, and took it again, and I barely made it, I believe, but I made it. And I got a 2-year contract teaching for the Brooks County Dependent School District. And at the time, the superintendent, the county superintendent, was Judge Brooks Sr. I don't remember his initials or his name. And my first assignment was in a little country school, one teacher in La Mesa. At that time, there were no highways, no cars. I would go to the ranch to school, and I would stay there about a month before I could find a way to get back home. But they were very rewarding years because the people, our people, were so nice and so helpful. And they looked up to the teacher. In fact, at that time, they thought the teacher was everything. Many anguish moments I spent there because if they had a problem in a mechanical problem, they thought the teacher could solve it. If they had a problem, a domestic problem, they thought the teacher could help them. I mean, to them, the teacher was something. The people were wonderful. I mean, they were really nice, and I enjoyed those 3 years at La Mesa and 2 years at Encina. And I was still, then, after I had worked a couple of years, I could afford to go to Texas A&I to school and start working on my degree. On $75 a month, I had to save enough to go to school during the summer. So it took me from 1927 through 1938 to get my bachelor's. Because on $75, you couldn't go all summer, and you couldn't go every summer when you had to leave out of those $75. But anyway, it was a very rewarding experience. But all through those years, the one thing in my mind was to better the plight of our Mexican Americans. To see that they could get more than I had gotten. Because I even felt at that time that I didn't know how to speak English correctly. Grammatically, yes. But I didn't have the vocabulary that I should have had. I didn't have the subject matter in my mind that I should have had. Because our experience in school had been very limited. We were not exposed to a lot of the things that others were exposed to. So finally, through the efforts like I said, but not here, I said it in the other one, through the efforts of some of the citizens, I finally was given a place in the five-year school system as a second grade teacher. And there were times, there were years in there, when I had as many as 52. The most I had was 52 in one room. 52 children. And our children were second to everything. Everything. At that time, later on, they built the new high school, which is in the corner of the highway and the courthouse, you know. I don't know the names of the streets now. And then that building, the old building, was used only for elementary. And quickly, they put the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade English-speaking children upstairs. We were downstairs. No contact, play period at any time. And that was in 1932. From then on, because I was there from 32 to 39. The fall of 39, I went to an AIDS. But I could see that we were getting a little better. The children were more alert. They were brighter. More children were staying in school. You could see the difference. Then we got more Latin-speaking Mexican-American teachers. Mr. and Mrs. John Adela came in. Miss Lilia Benavides came in. Later on, Stella Guerra came in. And then they had a girl from San Antonio, Carmen Aguilar, came in. And then later on, Beatriz Treveño. And when I left, those were the ones that were there. High school? None. None. But we could see that things were getting better. We could see that things were getting better. A lot of our graduates, the young businessmen or the young career men in the community were getting good positions. They were learning the process of politics. They were getting into business. They were getting into the educational field. So we could see that there had been a progress made in this. Of course, the political machine was very strong at that time, very, very strong. And a lot of the politicians there were very good friends of mine. I mean, we didn't try to rock the boat. Everything was just fine. But then something broke in the sheriff's department. The sheriff was accused of embezzlement. He was proven guilty. He left. And then hell broke loose. Because that's the only way I can say it. Everything was up for grabs. And we, the Mexican Americans, decided that this was the opening for us. And sure enough, following election year, we had a lot of candidates. We had a candidate for county clerk, district and county clerk. We had a candidate for county surveyor. We had an opening candidate for attorney, treasurer, and I believe one or two commissioners, county commissioners. I don't remember very clearly, but it was a big opening, and it was grabbed by men that, in my opinion, were very well qualified. Very well qualified. The Ian machine was so well instilled in everybody's mind. They had all the advantages. But through a lot of work and speeches and tireless work from some people, we were able to get a slate of officers that we thought was very good. And in my opinion now, I might not have thought so at that time, but in my opinion now, I think that any slate that we could have come up with would have been better than what we had. In the sense that they were very good to us, As long as we didn't ask too much. You know what I mean? As long as we didn't ask too much. In other words, give the Lord he can, but don't let him rock the boat. Let's go smoothly.
This was the political machine.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Until, I believe, if I recollect correctly, until after the general elections in November. I may be wrong. It might have been before, I don't know. But it was way late after summer. Of course, that, since politics were involved in every phase of our lives, that affected our positions in the schools. And come the following spring, I found myself out of a job because they claimed that I had had something to do with what had happened in the primaries the year before. And to this day, I don't know what I did. I didn't know I was that smart that I could do anything like that because I didn't do anything but my duty. But anyway, I was out. Others of my companions, or my fellow teachers, that we had been there from the very beginning. But by that time, I believe that the plight of the Latin American in the schools was a little better. I mean, we're not going to sit back and keep quiet. I think that the thing had been broken, and now it was for the best. Went on, and I do think that things got better, because I think that when you have opponents, in politics, you have opponents everywhere, and it has gotten so that there are opponents, Mexican-Americans against Mexican-Americans, but they have the right and they have the opportunity now to get somewhere, which they least in my adult lifetime that I spent there. So I was left without a job. I felt bad because I was born there. So I left for Furias. I got a job in Benavides, Texas, which I enjoyed very much, but it lasted only 3 years. And then World War II broke out. At that time, I had never been out of my little world, Honduras and the surrounding countries around there. In other words, I was just a country hick. I'd never been anywhere for a very long period of time. So when our government was in trouble, and they were recruiting people for all kinds of jobs, I decided that maybe I should do something to serve my country. And I did. I got a job with J.T. Canales, George Canales, who was a native of Fremont, this day. George Canales had been very active in politics and Mexican-American affairs and so forth and so on. So I got the principalship. And I found the plight of my people very low. Very low. Some of them were dirty, hungry, neglected. We opened the doors of the J.T. Canales School on September the 3rd, I believe it was, at that time, with staff of 10 teachers and myself, the principal. It was a brand new school. There was nothing there but the rooms with 30 seats each, desks, and not in the books, furnished by the state. So we were very lucky because we had a group of teachers that were very dedicated and very willing to work for the children. As I remember, we started a clinic right away. The teachers taking turns, cleaning heads, cleaning sores, bathing children, getting donations of clothing and stuff like that. We made it. In 2 years' time, the school was added on to, and instead of having 8 rooms, we had 14. And we kept on working. We organized 62. And our school grew from from a 10-teacher school, to 35. We had a tremendous PTA organization. We had a very good school with the help of the patrons and the teachers. We worked together. We had everything that the children needed because at that time we didn't have the federal programs that we have now. At that time it had to be done by the patrons and by the teachers. We held carnivals, bingos, and we had it equipped to a T. It was one of the best equipped schools in the whole system. So everything went on fine. Of course, the system kept on growing and growing and growing. They built another school in this part of our city, which took a lot of the children away from us. But still, the number of enrollees was the same because Brownsville was getting larger. All the time. We had a tremendous PTA and we had a tremendous faculty. I couldn't have done it by myself, even if I had wanted to. But we worked as a team. Whoever could contribute an idea or something, it was put into effect. In other words, I didn't consider that I was doing it. In other words, the teachers were because they were helping me with ideas and we worked together. So in my opinion, I think that we had one of the best schools in the whole system. But as usual, politics come in. And as has always been the case, most of our teachers in the teaching profession, I think, are very good. They're tremendous. But like in any other profession, you find some that are not. I mean, it stands to reason. We're only human. And there was always the tendency that if a teacher had not been accepted on that side of town, so I was dedicating my life, and I think that most of our teachers there were feeling the same way, that we wanted the best for our children, were about 95% Mexican-Americans. We had a few Anglos, but very few. But when the superintendent started doing things that I thought were not fair, I was not going to take it. So when he called me and he said, I'm going to send you two. One is so-and-so, you know, she's very weak. But the other one is so-and-so, and she's tremendous. And I knew the two teachers. I said, okay, I'll compromise. As it turned out, the good teacher was with us exactly 5 days. And on the 5th day, I got a call from the superintendent saying, I'm sorry, we're going to move Mrs. So-and-so. So, I know I did wrong, but I don't regret it. I said, okay, Mr. Superintendent, if you take her, you're going to take the other one too. Because when she comes here Monday morning, she's going to report to your office, not to mine. Of course, I was being insubordinate. I realize that now, but at the time, I didn't care. And I don't care to this day. Because he hadn't played fair with me. He had told me to take this other teacher because this good teacher was coming along with. So Monday morning, this poor old teacher reported to me and I said, you're supposed to go and see the superintendent. And I sent her to him. And I don't want to make it too long, but that was the end of our good relationship. But the teacher didn't come back to me. Neither one of them. The good one or the bad one. So, I knew from then on we had several discussions. We had several arguments. He never could convince me, and I never could convince him. He had a right to his opinion, but I felt that I had a right to my opinion. And sure enough, March, time for re-election of teachers, I knew I was not going to be re-elected. I knew it. When teachers were re-elected, I was reassigned to the classroom. Our patrons and our PTA raised up in arms, asked for a hearing. We had a hearing, which was, I don't know whether I should say this or not, I enjoyed very much. Because I was able, I knew I was out, I knew I didn't have a chance, but I was free to tell the board members and the superintendent just how I felt about the whole thing, and I did. But they denied me an airing in open meeting. They said it had to be a closed meeting. It was a closed meeting with representatives of different groups. But I told them just what I felt. So I was out of a job. I mean, I was not out of a job. I could go to the classroom. But I was not about to. Not here. Somewhere else, yes, but not here. So, I was assigned to at a very late period because he had assumed or he had heard that I had another job in another system. I had not told him so. I had not sent a letter of resignation. I hadn't done anything.
How long did it take for you to sign?
He had not assigned me because he had heard that I had a job outside of the system. But I was waiting to be assigned because I had not been fired. So I went to the new superintendent. Because in the meantime, these other superintendents had been demoted, like I had been. See? So I went to the new superintendent, and I told him what had happened. And he said, I don't know anything. He said, let me call the old superintendent, the ex-superintendent. So he called him, and there we sat, side by side, the ex-superintendent and myself. And these new superintendents said, what happened here? Mrs. Shewitz has not been reassigned to another school, assigned to any school. What is it? And he said, well, I have heard by the grapevine that she's going to teach in another system. And I said, do you go by the grapevine? Did I put in my resignation? I'm waiting for you to assign me. I have a contract with no assignment. So we had a big discussion there. And I told him just how I felt about him, you know, and so forth and so on. So the new superintendent said, you will be assigned. So the next day, I got a letter from the old superintendent assigning me to a certain school. And I waited 2 days until the other one had taken over, and then I sent my letter of resignation. Because I already had another job in another system, you know? So that's the way it went. But in the meantime, I believe that by that time, we had made a lot of progress. And I think that our people were coming into their own. We still have a few vendidos. I want to get on the record. We still do. We still, and we will have them all the time. That we're doing, they're afraid. You know? Why would she go along? Well, that's not in my disposition. And I don't believe it'll help anybody. It'll help a few, certain ones. But if you want to help the whole thing, I think somebody has to
do something. She was, you said that when you came back to Falfurrias as a teacher, that there were no Mexican-American teachers teaching in the high school.
Or the grammar school. Period. There were no Mexican-American teachers, period. I was the first one, through the efforts of one of the board members, Mr. Rufino Garcia Sr., after trying 3 years in a row to get me in, he finally succeeded the fourth time he tried. I never wrote an application. In those days, I guess applications were not used. But I knew that he wanted, because he had asked me if I wanted to go in there. So he was the one that was working for me to get in. And at the fourth time around, I got in. I was the first one. Years before there had been a Mr. Tomas Padron. Not from Falfurrias. He was not a native of Falfurrias. I don't know where he was from. But he had taught there a man first grade. First grade. But then many years, see, Mr. Padron was a teacher when I was in school. So it was many, many years before I went as a teacher to Falfurrias. And since Mr. Padron, I was the first one. And I got in there teaching a second grade. But about 2 years later, we got in two more, Mr. and Mrs. John Evela, who had been teaching in La Mata, one of the little country schools. I think they call them dependent school districts. Then later on, Miss Lilia Benavides came. And then, I don't remember what year, but Estela Guerra came in, who is now the principal of the elementary school, and Mrs. Canales. That was about 5 years later. And then we got another teacher from San Antonio, Carmen Aguilar. And then we got another one, Beatriz Treviño. And then it was that year that I was out. From then on, I think the Mexican-American teachers started coming in, and they came into their own in high school, junior high, and everything.
You stated that it took 4 years before you could get in, that your name was brought up by Mr. Garcia.
Yes.
Is it true that vacancies were open when it was said that they were not, and the new people were coming in at this time?
Well, I don't recall that very clearly, but it stands to reason that in 4 years, surely somebody dropped out or a new teacher was needed. Because I remember that Mr. Garcia quoted to me, and I quote, he told them, there is no vacancy. Well, this is the fourth time. If there is no vacancy, we are going to create a vacancy. And they created a vacancy.
As all the rest of these Mexican American teachers came in, did any of them ever teach the Anglo section of the elementary school?
Never.
Or always to the Mexican American.
Right.
How were the supplies back then for the teachers?
Very limited. When you went into the classroom, you had four walls, 30 or 50, depending on the number of children that were sent to you, desks, and 30 or 50 children, a teacher's desk and a chair. Supplies were unknown, except what the teacher could supply or the children could supply for themselves. And that was for the whole time that I was teaching in the Falfurrias Independent School District. And I believe that it was the same. I can't speak for other systems, but then I moved on into another system and it was the same situation. Then I moved into another one. My third one was the same situation until these government programs came in, which has been recent. And then the supplies have been abundant.